Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you here this evening, just before St. Patrick's Day. Well, if you are on our list, you know that we'll be discussing the arrival of the Irish. Oh, we've been having so much fun in the backyard. However, I want to take a moment to remind you that we are going to be taking a virtual trip. So leave your problems behind. Remember the saying in Jamaica, no problem, man. So you will be seated in your favorite chair at whatever part of, in whatever part of the island would be your favorite place to be. On this virtual trip, we're going to be transported to the backyard or the beach, or on top of the roof, or by the riverside. But we are just going to feel those trade winds blow across our face as we just relax and become enlightened about how we became one people. For visitors to our site, you may not know, but our motto for generations has been out of many, one people. And over the past couple of weeks, the Backyard Labrish has been really enlightening. We're enlightening ourselves as to how deep these roots go. So we've discussed the arrival of the Africans, the Lebanese, the Indians, the Chinese, and the Jews. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the Irish. And I thought it would be appropriate since tomorrow is St. Paddy's Day. So lots of our visitors may not know that lots of Jamaicans have a little Irish in them. So we're going to be sharing, even a lot of Jamaicans don't really realize how deep these Irish roots go. And most of the articles that I've been sharing are online at Pieces of the Past, and I've been using mostly the articles by Rebecca Tortello. So this evening, not only am I going to be using her article, but also from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, there's a wonderful article in that encyclopedia entitled, but now that book is by Oliver Senior, Olive Senior. And I just thought of it this evening that most of the times the information that historic information that I've shared is from three female historians. I use Dr. Tortella's pieces of the past, Olive Senior's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, and Dr. Joy Lumsden research on Jamaica. So we have a lot of information. You know, we ladies can be very passionate at times. And I just want to thank these historians for devoting so much time and effort to documenting some of our Jamaican history. Because the Jamaicans who grew up during the period that I did will agree with me that we did not really have a lot of Jamaican history during those times. So I see that we have callers on the board that I always like to welcome and to remind you that you're always welcome to join the Labrish by hitting 1 on your telephone. I will see a raised hand and know that you want to join in. So please feel free to make comments. This is a relaxed platform, and just like you would in your backyard, and a Labrish is just conversation about a subject that would be important or interesting to a group of friends. So consider yourself a friend in the backyard this evening and join the conversation. So let me start off by sharing with you Dr. Tortella's piece in Pieces of the Past. Now, she starts off by telling us about a very famous Jamaican that most other Jamaicans will know about. And she says, Sir Alexander Bustamante, national hero and first prime minister of Jamaica, used to boast that he was 50% Irish, 50% Jamaican, and 10% Arawak. Now, well known for his humorous nature, charm, and charisma, Buster, as he is affectionately known, was clearly touched by Allen's Blarney Stone. He had the gift of gab, so to speak. Buster is not the only prominent Jamaican to claim Irish heritage. There's poet Claude McKay, Chris Blackwell, founder of Island Records, one of Jamaica's foremost historians and former UWI Vice Chancellor, Sir Philip Sherlock, writer John Hume, and successful horse trainer Philip Fiani, whose mother is from County Cork, Ireland. In addition, surnames such as Burke, Colin, McKay, Murphy, and Madden, to name just a few, are common enough. Irish influence is also found in the names of places. There's St. Andrew's Irish Town, St. Mary's Kildare, and Conmel, and St. Thomas, Belfast, and Middleton's, among others. So there are lots of, this is my bar, there's lots of Irish names, surnames, and places named similar to places in Ireland. So I'm going to diverse a little to just remind our listeners, you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And the series for the past couple of weeks have been really enlightening, because we're really learning how deep our mix is in terms of different cultures coming together to produce just Jamaicans. So I am always so intrigued when I discover new information, and it's just been a learning experience for me. Because if you go back, if you missed any of the shows, I would suggest that they're all archived, and Blog Talk Radio has them in order of time. So all of the shows can be accessed and listened to at your convenience. So we have the details as told to us by Dr. Tortello. So let me go back to the article. And she gives us a little history about what was happening in Ireland at the time. We've learned that so many of the ethnic groups arrived for similar reasons. Different times, some during, you know, before others. But some of the reasons they were there or they came there, whether by their choosing to come or being forced to come one way or another. But there are lots of similarities in why they came and how they came. So we're talking about the Irish now who arrived in the 1600s. The Irish arrived in Jamaica over 350 years ago. That's the time she was writing this article, of course. In the mid-1600s, at the time of British Lord Proctor Oliver Cromwell's capture of Jamaica. When British Admiral Penn and Venables failed in their expedition to take Santo Domingo from the Spanish, they turned their attention to Jamaica, not wanting to return to Cromwell empty-handed. With reinforcements from British-held Barbados, many of whom were Irish, they made quick work of dispatching the weak Spanish defense and soon realized that they needed workers to support their new prize. They looked eastward to islands already under British control, Barbados, St. Lucia, St. Kitts, and Montserrat, and imported young, mainly male, bonded servants, many of whom were Irish. So let me read the other chapter, and then I'm going to make a connection to another group. In 1641, Ireland's population stood close to 1.5 million. Following a 1648 battle in Ireland, in which Irish rebels were brutally subdued, Oliver's son, Henry, was named Major General in command of English forces in Ireland. Under his jurisdiction, thousands of Irish men and women were shipped to the West Indies to provide a source of indentured labor. Between 1648 and 1655, over 12,000 political prisoners alone were sent to Barbados. This was the first set to come involuntarily, as prior to that, the Irish had willingly chosen to subject themselves to terms of indenture for the chance to start a new life in the New World upon completion of their contracts. So if you, any of the listeners will remember, that the first Africans to come in 1515, I think it was, were actually prisoners of war that were captured by the Spanish. So, and here we go again, the first set of Irish settlers came because they were actually prisoners of war that were sent to Barbados. Then they transported them from Barbados to Jamaica. So I just found that very interesting how, you know, it's two parts of the world that's so separated, you know, Africa and Ireland. And there was, for the same reasons, they ended up in the same place. First as prisoners of war, of course, the Africans as shackled slaves, and the Irish people as, I suppose, indentured servants, which was called at one time white slavery. So let's go back and remember, listeners on the board, you can chime in, because it's a relaxed conversation that I hope you, like I do, find educational, because I'm just learning so much from these articles. Now let's get back to the article. In 1652, Ireland's population had dwindled to a little over 500,000. Famine, rebellion, and forced deportation, all factors. Throughout the early years of the 1550s, there was a push to send young men and women to the colonies in what the English believed was a measure beneficial to the people removed, who might thus be made English and Christians, and a great benefit to the West India sugar planters, who desired the men and boys for their bondsmen, and the women and Irish girls in a country where they had only maroon women and negress to solace them. And she quotes where she got that information from in the article. The 13-year-old war from 1641 to 1654 had left behind large numbers of widows and deserted wives. In addition, many Irish men, their properties confiscated by Cromwell, had no means of making a living. By 1655, some 6,400 Irish had been shipped off when in March all orders to capture all wanderers, men and women and other such Irish and their possession were revoked. So as I read through all of these historical documents, we find that, man to man continues to be unjust, because here these people were forced to leave their country, leave their properties, and then there were the terms they would use to describe them. Mentioned on several occasions, it is strange how history can repeat itself, because as we speak, all over the world there is religious wars going on, one religion against the other religion, and superiority. One culture or set of people feel they're superior to another set. So I just find it quite interesting as we look into our own past and how the mix got into the pot to make this wonderful culture that we, a lot of people in my age group, grew up in. And I must say, I am always so grateful when I look back on my growing up and realize how fortunate I was to be born and raised on the island of Jamaica. So at this point, I would like to take a minute to tell you that we're having a pollen attack in my city that I live, because spring is busting out all over and it's absolutely beautiful. But for pollen sensitive people like me, it can present a problem. So if I have a little difficulty tonight, please bear with me, because my eyes are all messed up with the pollen and so is my chest and throat. So I can hardly see as I read. So as I stumble through this, please understand. But I really want to invite you on the board. I see we have quite a few callers from 973, 718, and 404. So 305 and 216. So feel free to join me in the Labrish if you have a story that relates to what we're saying this evening, or just want to make a comment. So I am going to continue with Dr. Tortella's article, and then I'm going to give you some excerpts from Olive Senior's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, because she covers some facts that Dr. Tortella might not have mentioned. So let me just tell you what the article goes on to say. The first stop. The first stop for many of the Irish, Catholic and non-Catholic, was Barbados, where they worked, listen to this, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a two-hour lunch break under the command of an overseer. Shirt and drawers were their only clothes, and their homes were cabins made of sticks and plantain leaves. So can you imagine the conditions they were then living under while they were in Barbados? Now, following the 1655 British conquest of Jamaica, Irish laborers were largely sent from Barbados as well as Ireland to get the island up and running under British control. Within a decade, when many Irish had served their terms or indenture, their names began to appear among the list of Jamaican planters and settlers. Last shipment. It is estimated that somewhere between 30,000 and 80,000 Irish were shipped from Ireland. One of the last shipments was made in 1841 from Limerick aboard the Robert Kerr. That's the name of the ship. The Gleaner noted of these arrivals, they landed in Kingston wearing their best clothes and temperance medals, meaning they did not drink alcohol, as quoted in one of the books she quoted from. The Gleaner also noted of another set of arrivals in 1842. The Irish are repeatedly intoxicated, this is from the paper, drink excessively, and seems emerging from going from grog shops. They're seeing emerging from grog shops, very delirious and abandoned, and are very intemperate. In other words, they're saying that they were drunk, I suppose. So the Irish gained a reputation for being something of a mixed blessing, saints and sinners. So from this, the British were not very happy with their behavior. Now, remember now that at one point the Spanish was trying to make everybody Catholics, and they were persecuting the Jews, and they ran from Portugal to Jamaica. So, and here now, the Irish that came, their behavior was really bothering the British. So they were writing and talking about them. So it says here now, however, other European immigrants did not seem to fare as well as the Irish in the tropical climate. In the mid-1830s, for example, when the government was particularly concerned about replacement labor for the newly freed slaves on the sugar and coffee plantations, the over 1,000 Germans and close to 200 Portuguese notched a high mortality rate. The idea was to eventually create townships for the European immigrants in the island's highlands, where the temperature was cooler and they could work as small farmers, laborers, and artists on coffee estates and cattle pens. However, this would take time, and in order to maintain pre-abolition levels of production, labor was needed in Jamaica's lowlands, where the best land for sugar cultivation was located. Hence, the implementation of bounties from European immigrants, and the institution of ships like Port Kerr, known as man traps, and sub-agents who wandered into quiet Irish town and attracted people with the promise for free passage, high wages, and the hope of bettering their lives. So what I understand here is that because the English, you know, the slaves were free, the plantation owners needed people to work, they started to have the captains of these ships and their sub-agents to go out into the Irish countryside and con people into coming to the West Indies for a better life. Isn't that something? So the con men were at work. Now, next week we're going to discuss the arrival of the Germans. So it really gets interesting. Now, let me go back. Do I have any hands raised? No, I see not. But everybody's still there listening, so I suppose you're finding it as interesting as I am. And incidentally, ladies and gentlemen and visitors to the backyard, I'm really reading these articles in detail for the first time because it's a lot of stuff to cover. And each week I try to bring you some, since I'm doing these kind of segments, some authentic information from various sources. So please bear with me. Now, let's go back. The immigration of Europeans never filled the abolition labor gap, and so by 1840, the government began to look to the Maltese, the free Negroes in the United States, and the Asians. In 1842, laws to break up what had been completed of the townships were passed, and the idea of Highland colonization was abolished. So they had some plan, I suppose, to make special parts of the island exclusive to some people, apparently. But they abandoned that thought in 1842 with some law. Remember now that during this period, the British was really, you know, ruling everything and everyone. Now it goes on to tell you about the contemporary Irish, which is the people, you know, now. But let me just go to to Olive Senior's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage and share some of what she says about the Irish with you. The Irish element in Jamaican life is often remarked by visitors who cite certain habits and attitudes, the love of storytelling and song, the rhythm of Jamaican speech, elements of folklore, and large numbers of Irish surnames and place names, including Irishtown in St. Andrew Parish. And, of course, there is what Jamaica call the Irish potato. Joseph J. Williams, who was a priest who lived in Jamaica in 1930, even entitled a book. His book, the title was Whence, W-H-E-N-C-E, The Black Irish of Jamaica. So we're talking about a book that was written in 1930, and that was the title. I am not familiar with it, and if any of the listeners on the board might be familiar with this book, please raise your hand and let us know what you know about it. Anyway, let's go back to the encyclopedia here. The Irish element in other West Indian islands, especially Montserrat and Barbados, has also been noted. Many Irish were undoubtedly among the early West Indian settlers, and some Irish families were landed indentured servants. The majority were bound servants. Some were tradesmen, soldiers, and in later years, soldiers and policemen. The English took Jamaica from the Spanish in 1655, shortly after Cromwell's force had engaged in the conquest of Ireland. This resulted in large-scale expulsion of the Irish, tens of thousands being shipped out to Barbados. Oh, I didn't know there were that many of them. And the American colonies as bonded servants. The English fleet that captured Jamaica stopped in Barbados for recruits, and many former bondsmen from the colony, as well as the colonies of St. Kitts and Montserrat, joined them. Thus, the Irish were among the soldiers who came the first settlers. Soon, Irish women whose husbands had died in the wars, the destitute and orphans, were shipped off to the new colony. Cromwell sanctioned the shipment to Jamaica of 1,000 boys and 1,000 girls under the age of 14, seized for that purpose by agents of the Bristol sugar planters. Hundreds of Irish men and women were transported to the island between 1671 and 1675, carried on Bristol ships, which called at Southern Ireland's ports before sailing for the British West Indies. They were taken on board willingly or unwillingly to be sold as bonded servants. Now listen to the pricing. Edward Long noted that the price paid for... The price paid to captains of ships that brought white servants from the British Isles in 1703. Every servant, English, Scottish, Welsh, or Jersey, J-E-R-S-E-Y, no, that was a race or what, in time of war brought £18. In time of peace brought £14. Now, Irish servants in time of war brought £15. In time of peace, they brought £12. Long odds. The cause of this depreciation of the Irish, I am informed of, but I am not informed of, but possibly they were more turbulent or less skillful in work than the others. In other words, what this is saying, that they would have a price change. It was like they were trading on the stock market, and the people were the stock. So they would have higher prices depending on where these people came from. Because if the servants were English, Scots, or Welsh, they would get £18, the captains. And if they were Irish, they would only get 14, so the price went down. Interesting. So the writer at the time was saying that, who she quoted from, they don't know why, they're just guessing why. This brings me to a sidebar. That is why I'm so passionate about the new technology that we are blessed with at this time. Because instead of someone having to write our history, we need to write it ourselves. And I would invite my listeners to use this platform to preserve some of their personal history because, you know, it will be in cyberspace long after we have left the planet for the other generations that will come after us to find information that we have left here. So feel free to put in your 2 cents. Tell us who you are, perhaps tell us where you're from and why you're listening to this show or why you have interest in Jamaica's culture, because you never know how useful this may be. Because every time I read some of these historic documents, I hear people guessing about why something was the way it is or the way it is, I'm always intrigued to put in my 2 cents so that if and when my great-great-grandchildren, who are Jamaicans, because my children are born here, and I have 3 beautiful grandsons that are born here, and I'm sure that they're growing up knowing very little about the culture I grew up in. And I think it's going to be hopefully such a treat just to hear my voice and know that I may be related to them, or even if that's not important, but that someone from Jamaica was talking about Jamaica and giving their ideas of the history they were reading. So I invite you to join me, if nothing less, for that purpose. So feel free to hit 1 on your telephone so you can join the Labrish. And again, for the listeners, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this segment is Backyard Labrish. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So I'll go back, and incidentally, in the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, there are beautiful pictures, actually, of the shipload of immigrants, and you can really see the poor people huddled. It looks like it's an actual picture and not an artist drawing, because they have another one of the people being blessed as they left Ireland in 1851 by the priest. So I find these pictures, you know, very interesting. So you might want to, this book, and also the pieces of the past has been made into a book, all of these articles that I'm sharing. So if you're ever considering a gift for a Jamaican or a Jabrit or, you know, somebody that perhaps don't have a lot of information or history, were not born in Jamaica, and might not even have Jamaican parents alive, this is just wonderful information for them to have in their home for their children and grandchildren. So I invite you to make this a gift. So let me go back to the article. I don't see any raised hands, so I just can imagine that the listeners are enjoying the stories and enjoying what my sidebars about the stories. So we will go back to find out what was happening as put together by Olive Sr. Among the early laws of Jamaica were ones regulated the indentured white servants, who also included the Scots, especially those seized in rebellions against the English, as well as English men and women who happened to be poor, vagabonds, or prisoners, and who were banished to the colonies for sale to the planters. Bond servants under 18 had to serve 7 years, those over 18, 4 years. Convicted felons for the time of their banishment. The law regulated their clothing, diet, and behavior. A male servant who married without his master's consent had to serve 2 years extra. They had to obtain permission to leave their place of employment. Many failed to survive the harsh treatment, work regime, and tropical climate. Some of the survivors remained as small settlers or traders, forming a category of poor whites who overcame their initial poverty and became landowners and merchants themselves. While the laws regulating indentured servants remained on the statute books, after a while, the penal clause ceased to be applied. The Irish, like others from the British Isles, also contributed significantly to the class of tradesmen on the estates, such as coopers, C-O-P-E-R-S, carpenters, and the like, cabinet makers and the like. These continued to come voluntarily as indentured servants, recruited by the planters as the plantation system expanded. Of course, some of the Irish landed families, such as Sligoville, also owned Jamaican planters and formed part of the island's elite. The Irish had a significant influence on the early formation of Jamaican speech. The incoming enslaved Africans spoke a multiplicity of languages and were forced to quickly forge some common speech on arrival on the plantations. As Cassidy and LePage, Dictionary of Jamaican English, that's another book I have to explore. There is a Dictionary of Jamaican English by Cassidy and LePage. The main contact of the Negro slaves was with these indentured servants and poor whites who acted as bookkeepers and overseers on the plantations rather than with the planters themselves. Such contact helped to shape the pattern of Creole speech and probably contributed to one's regard as an Irish tilt in that speech. The early English speech was dominated by Western, Irish, and Northern dialect speakers, with throughout the 18th century, a large proportion of Scots. So even out the way we speak and the sing-song of our voice as we speak is a mixture, according to these historians, of all these different cultures put together. And I find that rather interesting. So with that said, that is what the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage has to say about the Irish. Needless to say that the article now that I will go back to Dr. Tortella's, and this paragraph will speak to the Irish in contemporary Jamaica. The Jamaican constabulary is patterned after the Royal Irish Constabulary, complete with a red stripe on the pant leg. Various Irish regiments, and she has all the names here, were, you know, because of the Irish influence. Guinness PC, we know about Guinness Scout, which originated in Dublin, now owns Red Stripe DNG, the largest Caribbean brewery. Now, at that time, they did. But now I know that, that's Red Stripe beer. So it perhaps is still owned by DNG. But I know that a lot of the soft drinks as we know it, like, all the different drinks, cola, champagne, and all of that, is now owned, DNG is now owned by Pepsi Cola, because if you look on your bottles, you will see it's a bottled by DNG for PC, which is Pepsi Cola. So even though our roots go back so long in terms of brewing and all of that, you know, we're being absorbed, some of these names are being absorbed by foreign companies. So, and then she goes on to tell you a little bit about what's happening with an Irish flair in contemporary Jamaica, or the Irish in contemporary Jamaica. There is Digicel, the cellular phone company, and the island's newish import. Yet the Irish connection in Jamaica goes beyond the names of people, places, and companies. It is found in a shared history of colonial domination and the achievement of independence in the same century. It is found in the experience of mass immigration. It is found in some dance styles. Catherine Durham, the acknowledged matriarch of Black American dance, once noted the similarity between maroon dance formation and Irish reels. It is found in the field of education. Many priests and nuns of Irish ancestry have taught generations of Jamaicans. It is found in something as basic as the melodious tilt of Jamaicans' accent. Yet perhaps it is most strongly found in Jamaica's love of laughter, horse racing, spirits, women, and song. So, if we are known to be drinkers and we love our liquor, we can blame it on the Irish. So, with that said, I would like to invite listeners on the board to put in their 2 cents or forever hold your peace. So, do we have any interaction from perhaps some Irish descendant or some Irish friends, that are descendant of the Irish? I see a raised hand, and boy, does that make me smile. So I'm going to be opening up the mic to 718-379 and welcome that listener to the backyard once I can get the mics working. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
This is Leigh from the Bronx, the home
Wonderful.
Of New York Yankees.
All right. Well, good evening, Mr. Leigh from the Bronx, home of the New York Yankees. Are you ready for St. Patty's Day?
Well, look, when I was in college here, I had a really wild experience marching in my first St. Patrick's Day parade.
Really? Now, why did you march, and how did you get to be marching?
Well, my school was about 98% Irish.
Ah.
So there is no way I could escape it. The thing is that being a Jamaican young man at the time, I didn't know what I was up against, so I went out and bought a brand new pair of Florshine shoes and buffed them to the, to glisten.
Ah.
This was a march from, and it still is, by the way, from 44th Street in New York to about 96.
Ah, is that how many miles, you think?
And imagine wearing a nice
brand new shoes.
Leather shoes, because at
you.
That I never wore sneakers before. So this was a learning experience.
Wow. Isn't that something?
That was I owned a plug for St. Patrick's Day.
Can you remember what year that was?
Ouch. That could have been about 1954, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Early.
I mean, I was young, and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point I wanted to make, though, is the influence that the Irish made on not only me, but anybody that went to St. George's College back in the day, because St. George's College had almost 100% staff it was staffed by Jesuit priests who
mm-hmm.
were almost 100% Irish.
Wow.
So we were greatly influenced by the Irish.
Now, let me ask you this. Were most of them directly from Ireland, or they were born in Jamaica of Irish parents?
Oh, no. They're like first and second generation Irish priests from the Jesuit order.
Right.
Particularly the order, the province of New England, they were not native Irish. But remember, first or second generation.
Right, I got you.
In other words, their mothers and fathers were from the old sod.
Right.
And being the Jesuit order, if everybody doesn't know, is a teaching order known throughout the world. And the school was privileged to have these people teaching us. So for that, I am eternally grateful.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's interesting because at the time when the Cromwell thing was going on, the Irish was Catholics. And one of the things that the English wanted is to make them, you know, not Catholic, similar to what went on with the Jews and the Spanish.
Yeah, well, that's a perennial problem still going on now in Ireland. Even that the Irish are...
The civil war, yes, that they're having between themselves.
Yes, and the English who ruled Ireland in those days, almost like a colony, were, the Church of England.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
They
it's interesting how so much have changed in some areas, and then a lot of the same thing is still going on.
Yeah, and it still has a lasting and bad effect on people in their relationship with England and English people. Anyway, the Irish, of course, as far as I'm concerned, had a great influence on people in my time in Jamaica.
Right. And I'm always asking if the current students that are doing history in Jamaica, really, if any of this that we didn't have a lot of, if any of this is being integrated in what they're learning about the island's history. And I'm throwing it out there, hoping that one of these days there will be somebody who's perhaps quite current and involved or know about the educational system and the curriculum that can enlighten us. Because I don't know, I just think that I'm hoping that it will become part of what they learn. Do you know anything about what's going on about the curriculum for history in the current education in Jamaica?
Not really, but this is what I have to say. It's a different day, it's a different time, because the very school that I am telling you about that had 100% Irish teachers almost, now... the faculty does. I don't even think there's one Jesuit priest. There is not one Jesuit priest on the staff. So, presentation of anything, including history, would be totally different.
And that's something.
And what we experienced in our time. So, it's a different day. I don't know what their syllabus contains or how they present it anymore, but I would doubt that they would put a lot of put a lot of weight on things Irish, things English. Excuse me.
Well, that's a shame because it all when you really trace how the different ethnic backgrounds fuse together eventually, No matter where they came from or how they came, whether if some of these people didn't come voluntarily,
right.
You know, nor did some of the other ethnic backgrounds. Some did. Some came with money. Some came without money. Some came, were forced to come. But eventually, at least during our times, everybody got along fine.
Yeah. Well, it was a melting pot, to say the least.
Right. And I think that if the Jamaicans that are growing up, no matter where they are, but especially in Jamaica, the more they know about their history, I think it's the more they would appreciate who they are, and appreciate the fact that there's so much they can do to preserve this rich culture.
Yes,
in, you know, embracing everybody is my point.
It should be taught. I agree with you, because they should appreciate that the motto that we have, where it came from.
Right, definitely.
And
anyway, as usual, you know, your contribution is priceless, and I appreciate you, as well as I'm sure the people who come by later on. Your input is always inspiring, and I want to personally thank you for it, and to remind you that if you know of anyone on the rest of the listeners who would like to share their stories, as long as it is something that will help us celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, we would just love to have them, wouldn't we, Leigh?
Sure would.
All right. So with that said, next week, I'm sure a lot of people are saying, oh, those different people came so long ago? It's amazing when you look back on the dates, you know what I mean? Because you just never, sometimes I'm reading it and I can't even wrap my head around it. But next week, we're going to be talking about the arrival of the Germans. So it will give us another in-depth look into their contributions to the melting pot. So I invite everybody to come by, and as usual, I always invite you to share the link with some of your friends that you think might have an interest in this particular subject or any of the ones that we have discussed so far. So, Mr. Leigh, thank you so much from the home of the Yankees to join us this evening in the backyard, and we hope you enjoyed your tropical drink.
Yep.
And you enjoyed, and I must remind our listeners that our classical reggae that we play at the beginning of the show is by Kevin MacLeod. And I want to give Kevin compliments for always putting us into that relaxed mood as we transport ourselves to the favorite spot we usually have on the island. Right? Excuse me?
I wondered who that was, the record, who that was by.
Yes, it's Kevin MacLeod.
Yeah.
So he's the one that helps us make the transition as we transport ourselves to our favorite chair. So with that said, I want to thank the listeners online, those who called in, and those who might come by later, and to remind you that we're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and we want to say, what do you say for St. Patrick's Day? Is there a special salutation?
There are lots of, what they used to say at school is R and Deborah. I don't remember what it means, but I remember that.
Oh, well, whatever it means, it's have a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And watch that liquor, because the Irish is known to love wine, women, and song.
Hush
well,
up.
Not, pardon?
I said hush up. Hush up.
Yeah. So they're noted for laughter, storytelling, and we're Jamaicans are really noted for that. So if you are a Jamaican with some Irish background, we salute you. If you're not, we salute you also, but we know that there are lots of different bloods running into, if you're a Jamaican, you have a perhaps have a lot of different bloods running through your veins, but it's all red, and it's all good. And with that said, I want to wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day, and as I say always, make it a great week. And hope we will see you next week, because we'll be here discussing the arrival of the Germans as we take our journey through the different backgrounds that came to Jamaica and made it what it is, out of many, one people. So, Mr. Lay, good night.
Good night.
And to the callers on the board, good night. And come back again next week and bring a friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a Guinness on me.
All right. I'll do that.
Bye.